China's central bank on the brink of launching a digital currency. How will this revolutionize the monetary landscape in China and abroad?
Bitcoin crossing the $14,000 mark.
Cryptocurrency surpassing $15,000 for the first time ever.
Now it looks like we may hit the $17,000 mark.
Bitcoin's price has been on a wild ride.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Backstory. I'm Dana Lewis. In this edition, a digital revolution. Driven in part by COVID-19, but there are many other factors. Digital because it's not a coin or a bill that you carry in your wallet or your purse, but an electronic holding, maybe on your phone or your computer. You already may use payment applications for some of your shopping and bill paying. But at lightning speed, governments are adopting electronic currencies they can track and control. And off the government grid, cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin are soaring in value. On this backstory, can you trust it? Will you use it? Have no doubt. And we talked to digital currency experts about the future and a China analyst because China is rolling out digital currency as we speak. And while they say it's to get away from the US dollar, it's probably more about tracking every aspect of how its citizens behave in the new digital marketplace of the world. All right, in London now, Nickel Digital Asset Management bills itself as Europe's leading digital asset management company. And I'm joined by Anatoly Krychilov and Michael Hall. Hi, guys.
Good morning. Hi. How are you?
Good. Yeah, very good to be here.
Bloomberg recently wrote, "We're living through a monetary revolution so multifaceted that few people comprehend the full extent, that the technological transformation of the internet is driving the revolution. The pandemic of 2020 has accelerated it." What do they mean? Michael, do you want to take a shot at it?
Well, I think we're seeing a new form of money. If you look at the evolution of money, we started off bartering sheep and cows. We moved to coins or seashells maybe before that, coins. Then we used to move to paper money. And paper money was tied to gold. And then it was that link was cut. And when paper money departed from the gold standard, it became fiat money that central banks could conjure up with, by turning the printing presses a bit faster, or now they just put more zeros in a digital bank account. And as a reaction to that, we've seen digital currency start off with that come with limited supply. So that, I think, is what's really interesting. COVID has kind of forced people away from physical cash into using contactless cash. And the next evolution of that is using blockchain-based cash.
Anatoly, why is it completely taken off? Bitcoin, you know, has risen. I don't know what it is today. You can give me the price today. But, I mean, it's essentially gone up like 139% year to date.
That's correct, yes. It's 18,000 plus. Essentially, I would say 2020, the year of COVID, triggered the entire kind of important evolution in digital currencies. Specifically, there was a sequence of events. COVID triggers mass unemployment. Mass unemployment triggers a response by a central bank, which can be summarized by flood market with money. And that's exactly what central bank did.
Everybody's so, printing money. Every nation that's trying to get itself out of the financial disaster they're in are printing money.
Correct. You have roughly $11 trillion printed over the last 10 months by major economies around the world. And certainly, if you look at that, at the very least, you appreciate why central banks do that. But as holder of capital, you have to preserve this capital, right? And your concern is how to avoid inflation, which started to loom at some stage, and currency debasement, which inevitably will hit. And we all know that every single fiat project in the world, fiat being a kind of paper money, right, ultimately ends at zero. So kind of intrinsic value is zero of this paper. And given that central banks so easily can inflate this, people, investors are looking for hard assets. And your classical hard assets would be real estate, gold, all these kind of overcrowded trades. And then suddenly you come with Bitcoin as a new form of hard asset. And specifically within BTC, you have scarcity element, similar to gold. There is a certain number of coins ever to be printed. And the schedule, the issuance schedule, is very precise. I can tell you exactly how many, say, Bitcoins going to be there in the system in, say, March 2032. Can you tell me how many US dollars going to be in circulated? Of course not, because there is no real
probably a lot more than there are now, because they're just going to keep printing them.
Exactly. You can say directionality is clear. There are going to be more dollars around. With BTC, you have this scarcity element, and that what drives the price up. And essentially, we've seen this unfolding demand, which to some extent was triggered by forward-looking investors such as Paul Tudor Jones, Drucker Miller, Bill Miller, and all of them. They look for a new way to protect capital. Bitcoin became one of those.
Michael, if I can get Michael to jump in here. So, you know, Nouriel Roubini, the New York University economist, wrote in 2018, he told CNBC, it's the biggest bubble in human history, talking about Bitcoin, and that the price would crash to zero. Then 8 months later, in congressional testimony, he said, Bitcoin's the mother of all scams. It's a, quote, shitcoin, unquote. And then fast forward to 2020, and now he has changed his story, and he's talking about, well, you know, it's not going to be easily debased, and that there's value there. So I would say that's a pretty big step back, but just not Roubini, but mainstream finance, mainstream banks that would kind of turn their nose up at digital currency now, I guess just mainly because of demand also, their customers want to invest in it.
Yes. I mean, banks are customer-led and they follow the money. And if people want to invest in a product, they will meet that demand.
And is that product now more credible than it was even a year ago? And why do you think so?
I think it's attracting more institutional interest. The names people mentioned, they were the original, you know, the leaders, the pathfinders in the hedge fund industry. And they started hedge funds, people like Paul Tudor Jones and Stanley Druckenmiller, when hedge funds weren't institutional businesses and a pension fund would never. Pension funds were still in stocks and bonds. Fast forward 30 years, pension funds and insurance companies invest in hedge funds, which they didn't do 30 years ago. So these people are leaders, they're innovators, and they are investing in Bitcoin now. And in 30 years' time, maybe sooner, pension funds and insurance companies will be investing in Bitcoin as well.
Electronic payment platforms, I'm stunned. I mean, you guys know these numbers quite well, but $40 trillion in transactions through Alipay and WeChat Pay, we're talking about China now, which is leading in terms of the development of digital currency so far. So the amount of transactions are huge. Do you see a difference between the boom in Bitcoin and digital currency and these currencies now that governments are talking about bringing in, and they've done so on an experimental basis in China?
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. There is the whole evolution of central bank digital currencies, so-called. To some extent, it was triggered by 2020. And if you look in the US, the whole model of distributing certain financial aid to ultimate population, right, goes through commercial banks. And it's not necessarily the most efficient way, because in the US, only 29% of these financial aid ended up in consumption. Another 35 ended up in saving, and another 35 ended up in repaying various form of debts, like credit card debts and so on. Mm-hmm. So from the point of view of stimulating the economy, it wasn't really that efficient. Only 29% went in consumption. Now, in China, in contrast, there has been an experiment which was run earlier this year. And the idea was a certain number of people were given what's called airdrop. When you got certain amount of cash, say $1,000 on your...
I think it was the equivalent of $30 each person or something. They gave away.
Whatever is the amount, the idea was kind of you can spend this amount of free cash given by the government in the next 3 months on a certain type of goods. Can you throw it in the stock exchange? Nope. There is no purpose of that. Can you save them? Nope, because it's going to expire in 3 months. And essentially, they force population to stimulate certain areas of the economy. And that may be this precision, which kind of classical monetary system lacks, and central bank digital currencies can provide.
Michael?
So I think central bank currencies are very interesting, but they suffer from like three basic flaws. One is that they don't stop the central banks printing money. In the same way they print physical money, they can print digital money as well. They can just multiply the bits on the computer drive and they print more money. Secondly, these currencies enable the central banks to do things they weren't able to do with paper money. One of these is negative interest rates. So you've seen that interest rates on bonds have gone negative, but it's very difficult to have negative interest rates, because if your bank's going to charge you a negative interest rate, you take all your money out and you just put that money underneath your mattress and it keeps the same value. So that's how you get around that issue. The third flaw is privacy. Now, I'm not saying that everyone should be trading like privacy coins like Monero, but I think people expect that they have a level of privacy from the government. And it's not Big Brother, where the government has a television in or TV camera in your living room, and they're not looking over your shoulder when you're using a bank account. You may not be doing illegal things such as buying drugs, but you might be buying a birthday present for your girlfriend.
I'm not, in case that was a question, Michael.
Yeah, exactly. So you might be buying a birthday present for your girlfriend. You might not want her to know how much you've spent on it and where it was purchased. So people expect a level of privacy with their money, and cash gives them that privacy. And the question is, what should digital cash give them that? And we have to strike a balance between having people freely being able to money launder drugs, which we would not want to have happen. But we also expect in our personal lives a certain amount of money we can use to spend without the influence and knowledge
of the government. That's an interesting range of balance that you talk about, right? Because China, they are absolutely tracking every single purchase and they know exactly what everybody's doing. And it's the ultimate Big Brother through the use of their new digital currency. And then, like, for instance, the Sufan Center came out today and they said cryptocurrencies are potentially a cover for a lot of illicit businesses. It's not the first time we've heard that, right? But they talked about Hamas, Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, U.S. intelligence agencies are trying to track digital currencies and Bitcoin and different coins that have been used by illicit organizations. So what's the middle ground here as this matures and develops and more mainstream investors are involved in it? What's the balance between, kind of Big Brother and the bandit down the road that uses cryptocurrency to do bad things?
Okay, so we hear those arguments a lot. And the more money has been laundered and used to finance terrorist activities using US dollar bills, but no one is proposing banning the US dollar bill. I mean,
no, but they are proposing tracking the accounts and tracking the transfers. Right? Not proposing, but they do it.
Okay, they should get rid of the $100 bill. Germany should get rid of the European Union should get rid of the 500 euro bill. I mean, if you want to launder money, that's the place to go, right? Your $500. And then the Swiss have a 1,000 franc bill. I mean, those are the ultimate money laundering tools. Bitcoin isn't, by the way. Anyone who tries to launder money using Bitcoin is in for a surprise, because every transaction is publicly recorded and accessible to anyone who's got an internet connection. If you have a browser window connected to the internet, you can put in a blockchain address and you can see every single transaction that's gone through that address. Now, there have been some digital currencies designed for privacy, which we don't trade in. And the only real use case for those is that. And so that's why we don't trade them. But it's a matter for the regulators. It's a matter for the central government to figure that out. The beauty is that if the government acts with too heavy a hand, there are tools that exist for people to circumvent them. And just as the people in China who want to use the internet, they can use a VPN. And so rather than have to read the Google search results filtered by the Chinese Communist Party, right, they can use a VPN and find out what Google really thinks.
Anatoly, would you just look, as we wrap this up, guys, would you just look down the road and tell me, where do you see this going now? Because now you have governments that are getting into digital currency. You have investment companies that, and very reputable ones that before didn't want anything to do with digital currency. Now they're slowly opening the door because their clients want it. Where are we 2 and 3 and 5 years from now?
Yeah. We've been asked, one of the questions is whether the central bank digital currencies can distort to some extent or compete with Bitcoin as the pure cryptocurrency. And in my view, they cannot, because Bitcoin is an asset with no monetary discretion, right? Nobody can influence the issuance schedule. While central bank currencies are there for completely different reasons. One of them is increased transparency of all the transactions. Essentially, you, as we discussed, eliminate any remaining privacy. But that allows states to create this kind of extract valuable behavioral information about every single client, a customer, and ultimately allows authority to better manage the economy. Because what they're gaining is a real-time spending updates for the whole economy. And becomes they're getting this kind of on-demand monetary policy, which they, in a very precise manner, now manage the entire economy by injecting money in various sectors. So for that purpose, it's completely different use cases, right? Mm-hmm. From the investment point of view, digital central bank digital currency are not attractive. You cannot really preserve your wealth.
Why do it then? Like, why are there calls? I mean, I know like the former national security advisor of Britain has just come out and said that Britain should have its own digital currency soon. So
and it should. From the government perspective, as I just mentioned, that's a beautiful instrument to control, micromanage the economy, right? So you have this very finely tuned spending, which you can now observe on the individual level. You can transfer to individuals rather than you give money to commercial banks and then commercial banks push them into economy. And as we discussed, in a not very efficient manner. So from the state point of view, having digital currency makes total sense. Now, from investors' point of view, investing in digital currency makes no sense. If you need store of value, you have to revert to an independent currency, which is one of them would be Bitcoin. And from here,
it's because it's more navigable because there are limited assets, exactly. Like in Bitcoin.
Exactly. As you know, there are 21 coins ever to be issued, of which 88% has already been issued. The balance of 12% will be issued over the next 120 years in a super predictable manner. So that's why you want to get exposure to that hard asset. Where we're going to be 3 years, 5 years from now, yeah. I believe it will become part of institutional allocations. As we have today fixed income equities, so will be allocation to digital assets. It will not. It will be kind of few percentage points, 1-2, maybe at a stretch, 3-5%. But there is a significant important role. It's a diversifier of the portfolios, and it creates efficiency on institutional portfolio level, improves your returns without really boosting your risk.
Michael, last word to you.
So one of the issues that the central banks had when they printed money is they gave it to all the banks and the banks went out and bought stocks and made Jeff Bezos a billionaire, or sorry, made him more of a billionaire, even richer. And it just increased wealth inequality. One of the benefits of central bank digital currencies is they, as Anatoly says, they can be very precise in targeting who gets the money and what the money gets spent on. And that's a much more efficient way of doing quantitative easing than just giving it to banks so they have bigger balance sheets and the stock market goes up. So this is digital currencies, central bank digital currencies enable them to actually give money, spend money where they want it, and do that money printing in the right way.
You mean like, for instance, like right now in this crisis where they're saying to people that, you know, people who are not being employed or unemployed or who need some support during the COVID-19, they would be able to actually send it directly to a family or a person, and then they would allocate it only for food, rent, something like that.
Exactly. A lot of those furlough checks that went directly into people's bank accounts, and that stimulated the real economy. It didn't make the stock market go higher in the first case, but it did stimulate the real economy.
All right, guys, from Nickel Digital Asset Management, thank you so much, Anatoly Krichilov and Michael Hall.
Thank you, Dana. A real pleasure seeing you this morning.
All right, joining us now from Berlin, Germany, is Max Kernfeld, who is an analyst with Merck's in Berlin. And Merck's is the Mercator Institute for Chinese Study, and they They analyzed sort of anything out of China and all things. And Max has written a brilliant article in, or co-authored a brilliant article in The Diplomat on China and its digital currency. Hi, Max.
Hi.
So give us a background a little bit here. Some 5,000 people in Shenzhen saw their phones light up in October, and they got a red envelope digitally, which gave them about $30.
That's right. So the Chinese government is launching a new digital currency, which is called Digital Currency Electronic Payment, which is perhaps not the most exciting name. So the idea there is to use something similar to Bitcoin to create a virtual currency so that the paper renminbi has a digital correspondent or a digital version of itself. And they've been testing this project in several different cities like Shenzhen, Suzhou, and it started with this lottery where they're just giving money away. But some government employees in some cities have also received their part of their paycheck in this new currency.
So it's really, look, this is a very interesting shift for a lot of different reasons, right? And I want to, you know, take you through some of that. But the People's Bank of China said that this will make the RMB more popular around the globe. Are they trying to replace the US dollar and trying to disengage from using the US dollar as safe haven and push their own currency out?
Yes and no. This has been going on for a long time, and there's nothing new for Chinese officials to say that they want to replace the dollar or that they need to reduce their reliance on the dollar. So this is just the latest step in a long process of where this has been talked about. But I mean, if you look at the actual results instead, it's pretty clear that the RMB has not been growing in popularity around the globe particularly much the last, say, 10 years. It's stable around 2 to 2.5% of SWIFT messages are cleared in RMB. The reason for this is largely that China prefers it that way. A great amount of RMB usage would probably lead to appreciation of their currency. So
I mean, just to talk about it for a second, though, why does Russian President Vladimir Putin, why do other countries, including China, keep talking about not being reliant on the U.S. dollar? Because that promotes sort of American economic domination. Is that what they're trying to get away from?
I think there's two parts of this. First of all, it's a practical issue in the sense that the U.S. has sanctioned countries in the past.
Iran.
Yeah, like Iran. They can, even though SWIFT is a Belgian company, they can put a lot of pressure on SWIFT and banks to not do business with Chinese parties if they wanted to. And in the case of Iran, this led to them having to greatly devalue their currency to protect their economy, which was under enormous pressure. Then there is, of course, a question of a narrative as well. These countries, Russia and China, don't want to see themselves as part of the American system. They want to be respected equally. And of course, part of that means that anytime you have an opportunity to talk about being independent or being strong individually, you have to take that opportunity.
All right. So when I took a look at some of the statistics, I mean, they are jaw-dropping in terms of the Chinese market on digital payment systems, like 80% of China's 900 million mobile internet users use their mobile phones for transactions. Chinese shoppers and merchants represent almost half the world's digital wallet users. And Alibaba and Tencent control 95% of the market and cleared 50 trillion with a T in transactions in 2019. It is huge, the use of digital currency.
Absolutely. I think it's a little bit analogous to the way airports and subways were set up in China, in the sense that if you look at the infrastructure in the West, this is rather old and oftentimes built very long ago, whilst everything in China is sort of new and fresh. And if I wanted to launch a payment system today, I wouldn't be using these old things that we use in the West. But in China, it's an emerging market, so they set up new, fresh things. And this digitalization has been the way it's been rolled out into the Chinese market has been very successful. I mean, everyone almost will use some form of online payment system, even farmers and in the most surprising places. You can go to the countryside in China and see people use these kind of technology to make payments.
All right. So I've led you through this, and we've kind of painted a picture that, you know, China innocently just wants to roll out a digital currency for efficiency, to make them less reliant on the dollar. And probably at the end of what we've talked about so far is where you take a turn in your article in The Diplomat, is that really it's not about that. It's probably more about surveillance and control. Is that right?
Well, to some extent, yes. The fact that so most of the digital payment systems in China right now are run by companies, Alibaba and Tencent. Now, if the central bank launches its own digital payment system, then that gives them control over the amount, the monetary base to a larger extent than they already have. They can issue as much currency or as little currency as they want. They will have complete visibility over all transactions that are made through their network. And they also have great ability to make users use their own preferred payment system. So it will undoubtedly result in a situation where the central bank has much more oversight of what's going on in the economy and can control things more in various ways.
This is the ultimate big brother tool.
It could be, but I think that something like this has multiple uses, obviously. So on the one hand, you can use it for things like this, but I think there are also quality of life things here. For the central bank's sake, you can have greater control of inflation. Oversight can be very good at catching illicit transactions and all sorts of things. So even though there is a control element, I don't want to be saying that that's the only use or that that's the main purpose of something. Okay. I think policymakers in China are generally speaking thinking rather broadly, and they have multiple goals with most of the policies they launch.
You've obviously become a bit of a digital currency expert in writing this piece and watching it. I mean, I guess, because if you take a look at what's happening in digital currencies around the world, I mean, Bitcoin is punching through, you know, record levels, as many other digital currencies are, cryptocurrencies are. But the whole design of those were to have anonymity through blockchain technology. So do we need to separate the two, you know, topics when we're talking about China's digital currency and other governments which are talking about moving towards digital currency and the original kind of cryptocurrency model, which was, you know, you could move money between people and you could do it with you know, virtually, you know, anonymously?
Yes, I think you need to separate these two, because the technology that you use for Bitcoin is the blockchain, right? Where you are having something unchangeable as the main strength of the currency is that you have this ledger that cannot be altered, or at least not easily altered. There are some blockchain experts who do say that it could potentially be hacked. Not that I know very much about that, but I think someone said once that the distinction between that an authoritarian regime will tend to gravitate towards AI solutions, and a more democratic regime will tend to gravitate towards the blockchain solution. So this blockchain cannot be altered by the government as much. This will be a constancy of units, or maybe there is some sort of algorithm that produces units at some set pace. Whilst in this case, the central bank can, of course, issue as much currency as they want. And I don't think it's very surprising that a central bank would want to have a currency they have control over instead of a currency that is written with some unalterable program.
Max Kierenfeld with Merix, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's our backstory on the digital currency revolution. It was supposed to take about 10 years, but it's been compressed and supercharged in the last year, mostly because of the pandemic. And it will change the way we do business, the way our governments operate. Remarkable.
and it's happening now. I'm Dana Lewis. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to Backstory, and I'll talk to you again soon.